Cause the player's gonna play, 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 and the hater's gonna hate, 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 hate. I'm just gonna shake, 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 shake it off, shake it off.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. We're good, Serena. Thank you.
Oh man, I can't
see.
Breathe.
It's not that bad.
Oh, it's bad. I am not. If you want me to dance, I'll dance on tabletops wherever you want.
Maybe that'll be the next season. That'll be the next season.
I am a great dancer. Singing is not my thing.
Welcome to the show, Sabrina.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for making the time. I know you're a busy person.
Yep.
And I know we've got a spectator on the side here.
We do.
He's one that actually connected us, right? Which is great. And it was great talking to you about what you've been up to. With the whole, it's pronounced Farrell?
Farrell, you got it.
Where's the name come from?
So on the periodic table, F-E, Farrell, iron, strong, etc. And then in Italian, I'm Italian by background, so Farrell, same thing, but different spelling.
That's still means the same?
Same thing.
Yeah. The Italian version and the English version?
Exactly.
One of the few words?
That's right.
And without getting into profanity?
Yes, yeah, I won't swear today.
How long have you been? No, you could swear, don't worry. We have a liquor license, we have a swear license, we have all kinds of licenses on this show, so we could do whatever we want. Yeah. But we're obviously going to talk about construction, we're going to talk about modular building. You've been at this for how long now?
So 2020.
2020 is when you took it over?
When I started the company.
What were you doing before?
I had an asphalt and concrete company, so road building.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of money in that, no?
There can be.
I've been told. I've met certain people, and I'm like, those are shiny-looking trucks, you know, shiny-looking everything, which is good because we need it.
100%. I would say on the material sales side of the business, like selling the actual asphalt and concrete, lots of margin there, for sure.
One of the, me being a motorcyclist, smells that I love is freshly laid asphalt.
Yep.
Like, I love it. I know a lot of people think it's pukish. It doesn't make any sense. Like, why do you like that smell?
Yeah.
But it is a nice smell. It kind of reminds me of summer.
Yeah, so, and some people in the industry call it liquid gold. So they smell it. Yeah, exactly. You got it.
That's it. Let me share the information here. Sabrina, how do you pronounce your last name?
Fiorellino or Fiorellino.
Okay. Triple W.
You won't attempt to say it.
No, I won't because I crucify everybody's last name. Right? Unless it's like Smith, then I'll figure it out. Triple W, it's FarrellIntl.com.
You got it.
Reach you is info@FarrellIntl.com. And then on all over social media, under IG, it's under Farrell International. LinkedIn, it's Farrell International Inc. And then Twitter, it's @FarrellIntl. Hang on, one little shout out. Frank and the boys, I got to give them a shout out to Deluso Tile out of, they're in the Collingwood area now. They've been on the show once before. Old school Italian guy.
There you go.
No filter. Had a lot of interesting things to say. Probably the second most listened to show.
Amazing.
He's in his late 60s, and you want to listen to these people because they've been through quite a bit. Sure. And he's got his son taking over the business now, and then he's got his son's best friend, and they've got a nice little outfit going on there. Mm-hmm. Problem is that I don't get them down in the core as often so they can come back on the show, and I would love for them to come back on the show, so maybe we'll see, because it's always entertaining to talk to him. And he was the one that taught me about spraying cologne on his carpenter's pencils or just HB pencils, put them in a cigar box, and then he always take the pencil out and put them in his ear, and he always have a nice little fragrance on the job site, so if you want to hit on a woman, you could hit on a woman and have this scent. And he would always, and I was like, that's actually a nice old school trick. So Frank, thank you. I appreciate that little tip there. Techno metal post screw piles are installed by our trained certified professionals using specially designed hydraulic machines. The piles are augured in until they reach a specified torque and depth, allowing our installers to determine the load bearing capacity for the structure. Helical pile foundations are made from hollow structural steel HHS that is compliant with ASTM A500 grade C. They are designed, tested, fabricated, and installed in compliance with Canadian, European, and U.S. building codes. When compared to bolted coupling in similar products, TMP's fully welded couplings ranked above the others and provided maximum strength, rigidity, and enhanced buckling resistance. Different shaft and helical blade sizes are available to accommodate the needs of structural support and site soil conditions. Our engineering department provides assistance to determine the appropriate sizes for specified project types. Reach out to them at www.technometalpost.com for your next project. Looking for cutting-edge solutions for your spray foam needs? Look no further than ElastiChem Specialty Chemicals. With a remarkable track record spanning over 3 decades, ElastiChem stands as an industry-leading supplying contractors across Canada with top-grade closed-cell, open-cell, and specialty foam products and accessories. Experience hassle-free spraying in both summer and winter with Insulthane Extreme, Canada's groundbreaking HFO closed-cell product. Time is precious, and we know it. Optimize your efficiency and avoid downtime by choosing the best products with the best technical and customer support. Elevate your spray foam game today with Insulthane Spray Foam products by Elastichem. Give them a try today. Visit their website at www.elastichem.com or give them a call at 1-877-787-2436. This podcast is brought to you by Redmond Distributing, a proud family-owned and operated HVAC supplier, serving Ontario for the past 22 years. With warehouses conveniently located in both Mississauga and Ottawa, they specialize in providing premium HVAC and hearth equipment across the region. Redmond Distributing is committed to supporting HVAC businesses with their dedicated customer service, reliable warranties, free training sessions in their operational facility, inventory management, and free delivery to most locations in Southern Ontario. For a partnership with true HVAC equipment specialists, choose Redmond Distributing. Explore more at www.redmonddistributing.com. Since 2015, Groove has been built off the foundation of experience, innovation, and the continued desire to evolve how work is done even after the trade has mastered it. The people at Groove have more than 40 years of experience in the drywall and construction industry. Their commitment to both the growth of the company and the individuals Groove simply calls clients is unparalleled. Their mission is to empower builders, designers, and architects with the freedom to build on their designs, to encompass creativity in all of their projects without sacrificing quality, efficiency, or affordability. They accomplish this by providing production-focused solutions and design workflows that allow builders to overcome their construction limitations through drywall. They see drywall in a different way. Innovate, inspiration, integrity. Groove Industries. Check out Groove Industries at www.grooveind.com and on social at grooveind, and reach out to them on their email orders at grooveind.com or Steve at grooveind.com and Andre J at grooveind.com. And also their phone number is 416-629-3756. But now I want to get into this whole modular world. Sure. What I know you were going on a tour checking out the facility.
Yes.
How did you find yourself there?
So when I started the business, we were subcontracting manufacturing. So we had a partner who did some manufacturing for us, and then we were subcontracting the rest, whatever we didn't have capacity for. And so we won a job for a hospital and needed excess manufacturing capacity and send it out to tender to a number of the modular manufacturing facilities or players in the industry.
And at the time were how many? Two?
There was a few. Okay. So, and there still is a few, but very few who really specialize in healthcare or have the deep healthcare expertise. But really at the time, the only one, in my opinion, who had deep, deep healthcare expertise was Elliston Modular. So we went to visit the plant a few times, and then eventually I asked if they would sell, and the rest is history.
And it was called Elliston Modular at the time.
It was, yeah.
And so Elliston was working on this for how long before you started it?
So I think they started their plant, or they had their plant fully operational in 2019.
Okay.
So around the time I started, they were starting. And then we bought the operation in September 2023.
And then it basically history now.
So history.
And business is good.
Business is good. We have the single largest modular manufacturing plant in the country now, 300,000 square feet, 8 acres of storage.
Right in Hamilton.
In Hamilton, Stone yeah. Creek, yep. And scaling quickly.
So I want to go and check it out one day, which we'll coordinate all that stuff and try to figure it out. But I'm still in awe of the whole modular industry because you have everybody that's in construction walking around indoors, building everything almost exactly the same way as construction,
yep.
but in a safe, controlled, non-mother nature environment.
Exactly.
Right? And then you bubble wrap them, protect them, ship them, get them onto site, and then they're put in place.
Yeah, you got it.
So that's the gist of it, but we're going to dive into it, right?
Absolutely. So yeah. so we call modular an alternative delivery method. So we build the exact same things traditional construction builds, just inside a factory like Lego blocks, and then deliver them on site for installation.
Are you having a hard time finding the workforce the same way that the industry is having a hard time finding the workforce?
So I would say no, because people love working inside. If they're going to choose working on site against the elements versus working inside in a controlled environment, they're always going to pick inside, right? They're doing the same type of work, But we have, like you said, on the health and safety side, we'll build roofs on the floor so we don't have working at heights issue, and then crane them up and put them on top of our building. So different things than traditional construction does to ensure that there's more safety in the plant.
Are you constantly looking for a workforce?
Yes.
Because you're expanding, yes. Right? Yeah. Obviously, you're getting more and more contracts. There's more and more need for this. I saw the video that was put together recently, and I looked at it, and I'm like, when I was looking through the final product, you can't tell that this is modular.
Exactly.
It almost looked like as if it was built on site and this was the product, and now you're walking through a completed area and you're like going, but wait a minute, that was put together as components, right?
Yes.
But you can't really tell. So it's like, are you getting more and more interest to get more people in there? And so I guess would the school start like, are they speaking up now? Start telling the kids that, by the way, modular is a whole other world of construction that is new and you should be considering.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot more education that needs to be done. One of the things we face in the modular industry as a whole, like all of us together, is public perception and what is modular. People think it's site trailers or mining camps or low quality. In fact, you know, we do volumetric modular. It's very high quality. We have a robust QA/QC program, less warranty claims, less deficiency claims because of our quality. When we built a hospital for Winnipeg, and we had zero deficiencies on our factory acceptance testing. So unheard of in regular construction, but it's just a perception issue. And through education, so you talked about the schools.
Yeah.
University of New Brunswick has a program on modular. I believe Windsor, if I'm not mistaken, just launched one in the last week or so. And then we have an engineer, our project manager, who's an engineer who studied at McMaster, and she went back to speak to the engineering students there. So they're going to incorporate modular in their engineering courses because of her and her wow. talk. So we really try to push education forward as much as we can.
Now, is the classes, are they hands-on, or is this on, I guess, the design and engineering aspects of things?
I think so far, design and engineering, but okay. The skill set in terms of skilled trades, very similar to traditional construction. It's really where the mate lines, where the two units come together. You have two units and you put them together. It's those mate lines that are a little bit different than what you would do in traditional, and the alignment of the ducting, your electrical, et cetera, that type of thing. And then different builds are different. So you, for example, in healthcare, you can't build it the same way as you can a school or residential because codes, et cetera, are different. So it's those nuances that need to be learned. But I would say it's not rocket science.
But once you guys have figured it out, right? Because yes. That's been my biggest yes. thing about everyone's always thinking that modular is the end and be all solution for everything. Right. It's not. It's another idea in the toolbox. Right? Yeah. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. So I say it's part of the solution. And we talk about housing as a good example. 1.5 million houses by 2030. You hear government speak about this. That's almost
by people who never built.
Right. well, you know, I mean, they're trying. We'll give them credit. They're trying to solve a problem that is a big strain because you have housing shortages, healthcare shortages, education shortages. And so how do you plug that whole? And I say needs an all hands on deck effort. Modular's part of the solution. And what I would say is we in North America are way behind in modular. In Sweden, over 80% yeah. of their homes are built modular. In Japan, over 70% of their homes. And so we need to catch up. We're at, I think, hovering around the 1% mark in Canada. So we are very behind.
Are we really that low?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So why are we not just going on YouTube and paying attention to what other countries are doing and kind of having a conversation with them, or even just getting on the horn and just talking to them on a call and just saying, how can we work together to create this bigger? And I know you're doing that.
Yeah.
You're working on that. Yeah. But the problem is that you also have your hands tied too, because I think that the general, I mean, okay, do you focus mostly on hospital, or what other divisions do you focus mostly on?
Yeah, so healthcare is 50 to 60% of our business, and okay. then education, housing, industrial, commercial is the rest of the business. It doesn't mean we won't ramp or those percentages won't change. It's just that we started in healthcare, and so that's what we're known for. As modular housing ramps, I'm sure we will ramp on that side of the business.
Have you gotten already conversations into homes and just dropping them in slight. So you start getting into subdivisions. I'm only assuming that that's all happening, right?
Yeah. So townhouses or stacked townhouses, subdivisions, multi-story housing, we're student housing, all of those conversations are happening now.
What's the, okay, because I want to get a little technical too, sure. Because the, what'd you call it? The mate?
The mate line. So where the two modules come together.
Come together. Yeah. So an average module is length, width, height.
So all different sizes. The big limitation is the shipping restrictions.
Transport.
Right. Yeah. And so in Ontario, it's the strictest across the country because of the bridges and underpasses here.
Okay.
More of them.
We'll create more work and just build bigger bridges.
Yes, true. You can. Yeah.
That's my thought process, I guess. But okay, until we do that, then we have limitations there.
Right. And so we can ship, the length is not usually the issue. So 60, 70 feet is fine. Width, you want to keep under 16 feet. It's the height really that it becomes restrictive. So I want to say 13 and a half. We've shipped higher. We've shipped up to 14 plus, but then you need permits from MTO. You need police escorts. It get the complexity of it. I would say when you're weighing it, the complexity outweighs the benefit of the size, the extra size or height.
And then it doesn't matter what travel path you find, you're still going to get stuck at some point where there's going to be limitations, right?
100%. Yeah. And the path is different, right? No 400 series highways at that size. So you have to go around and more rural roads. So it becomes challenging. Absolutely. We've done it.
No 400 series highways at all?
No.
Like for any travel path?
No. Just for the oversized
For the height, oversized units.
Height. Yeah.
Wow. That's a bit of a pain. How do you get around Toronto? How do you get around Canada in general if you're not touching 400 series?
Can be challenging for sure.
Okay, so back to the mate. So when you're joining the two together, because you built the unit self-contained, but you have mechanical systems, all kinds of ideas or details of that unit that have to marry to the next one,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So how is that happening? I guess because there's structural components, there's mechanical components, and then I guess you get into the insulation components as well, right?
And your
so you
want to
make sure.
Barriers.
Yeah, you don't want to have a draft of some sort from correct. Putting these things together.
Yeah.
How does all that work now?
Yeah, so probably I'm not the best on the technical side, but you, in a lot of cases, you have one wall open on each module, sometimes two walls open, and so you're just connecting them together and doing the finishing on site. So your vapor barrier finishing, sometimes we'll leave a few feet on either side of drywall flooring unfinished. And so when you're finishing those seams,
you can go right
it looks
over.
It looks like there's no mate line there once it's done.
And then how big have you gotten? Like how many units can you put together on a single floor and how many units can you go up?
So with our proprietary steel frame system, we can do 7 stories unsupported. It doesn't mean we can't go higher. In the UK, they just delivered a 50-story building modular, which was phenomenal, really beautiful work.
Same structural steel components?
A heavier structural steel. So we do it, ours is light gauge steel, but we can move to a heavier gauge steel and go higher. Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. And you guys are fabricating your steel too?
We do some fabrication and then some assembly. On the steel side, we have in-house welding, CWB certified in-house welding. We have a steel saw with some automation in it where the saw has some level of, let's say, AI or intellect where it knows if there's a part of the steel that gets sawed off and it can be reintroduced in the project to reduce waste, it will automatically reintroduce that steel.
So you're basically getting a canvas, like a blank canvas of steel, and then it figures out exactly the best way to cut it efficiently.
Exactly.
But there's still going to be waste to cut off, but then you can use those.
Exactly.
If it finds the source for it.
Yeah, if the cutoff makes sense, absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Wow.
And so way less material waste on modular. And you can even understand it, way less material waste because you're in a controlled environment. So none of the materials are getting exposed to the elements. Like if you have drywall laying on site and it rains and it's exposed, it's done.
Yeah,
right?
It's mold. Garbage. It's garbage.
Garbage, right? Same with
some. Well, unfortunately, it's still installed on certain job sites.
Right. We don't do that.
We don't do that. But I've seen it. I've seen it that way. Because you're like, oh, what can we do? We don't have our windows in yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
But in your environment, that doesn't happen.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Because you just got like that's what I was impressed with the videos that you're literally walking around with the drone footage and you're seeing pallets of all kinds of construction material that are no different than it's like this is not specialty stuff other than the metal, other than what you guys have structurally created engineer wise.
Correct.
Everything else is a typical 2x4 drywall sheet material.
Yeah. We do have some proprietary technology. So we have some wall panels system and exterior cladding system that we filed patents for. And so our interior partition system is made out of steel or aluminum, a tab and lock system, really fast. It goes on a track and you just put the panels together, click, click, click. And so it eliminates drywall, mudding, taping, all of this stuff. And so we've installed it in some of our healthcare projects.
And that's a finished material surface.
It is. Yeah, it is.
And it meets all the standards for the healthcare?
It does.
Because you have to start dealing with, I guess, filtering materials, or you have to, I don't know.
Yeah, so different standards for healthcare. Yeah. Like, so we meet building code. It doesn't matter what we're building to. We meet building code both for the municipality that we're in and for the end use. So healthcare has a different set of codes, including ASHRAE standards, et cetera, which now we're getting really technical. But we meet those in everything, in the air filtration, you know, materials. Usually the hospital or the end user will spec what they want. Sometimes we'll recommend an alternative and it's up to them whether or not they choose it.
Because you're just making the suggestions at that point.
Exactly.
Now, back to the government and where this is somewhat, they're useful.
Yes.
They look at the two variables here. So if you were to build traditionally, yes, get on site and have to erect a structure versus building with your technology, how much time and how much money are we saving here?
So we always say modular can be 30 to 50% faster all day long if done correctly, right? And that's really,
you need the workforce
really important
and the plan and everything to be doing it correctly.
And we need the authorities having jurisdiction to understand the permitting, et cetera, process. Because if permitting takes a year in traditional and permitting takes a year for us, no one's getting any favors there, right? You're not doing any favors. You're just as slow in a lot of ways. Once permits in place, we're always 30 to 50% faster because you can do foundation work while we're building in the, yep, plant, and then you're installing and you can imagine how it can go. I would say also because of the way our plant's configured, we have multiple assembly lines and so we can really pump product. It's made for high production, so you can really pump product off those plants. So, you know, on school lines as an example, we can get out 2 units a day per each of our 6 lines, so 12 units a day off our lines, very fast, really, really fast.
So you guys would meet those standards of 2031 and get all the houses done.
I mean, not alone.
But you'd be contributing to a large portion of that
number.
We
could. Yeah, we could. Absolutely.
Right? Now, I'm just curious, do the inspectors come to your facility?
So they can if they want to.
Because you're delivering somewhat of a completed product on site,
yeah,
which we all know how inspectors feel about that.
Yeah.
So I just assume that they would come to you, or I guess they get in connection, communication with the engineers, and that's what happens.
Yeah,
right?
So we have CSA certification, two okay. CSA certifications, and so the authorities having jurisdictions can choose to adopt those certifications or not. If they do, they don't have to come to the plant, but your engineer architect of record still has to sign off. That being said, we have a robust process where we take pictures every day as part of our QAQC process behind every wall, every crevice, every test we do, every RFI. It's all in that system.
Every unit.
So if an inspector wanted to see behind this wall on this day, a plumbing,
it's documented.
You can see it. Yeah, we can bring it up for them.
And you absolutely guys have like a photo album for each one?
We
Is
do.
That the idea?
Absolutely, yeah.
Polaroids?
No, all electronic.
I know.
Are you going to come and take them?
No. What I'm just saying, I can picture this old school, you know, and you pull up the plastic and you hear that sound, right? No, it's documented properly. So then you go, here's a file, take a look at it. And now we're not BSing you.
Exactly.
We're telling you the truth that this is how we built it because this is how we designed it.
That's right.
Right. Yep. Which is a good thing. But then they still have to show up on site, I guess, for the mating process.
They do. Yes, they will go on site. Absolutely.
That's funny. They're Tinder inspectors because they're there to see the mating going on between the units, right?
Yes.
That's exactly what they are.
Yep.
For someone sure. calling inspectors Tinder inspectors, right? I'm going to keep them calling them that. So that's fascinating. Now, how do you make the roof line?
So same. So everybody does it a bit differently on the modular side. But a lot of the time we have a cap that goes over so you don't get water. Right.
Because you could still cover the roof on the section that's already been built. But then as soon as you join the two together, you just got to have the seam taken care of.
Yes. And we do finish our roofs. Like there's some people who don't finish roofs. They finish them on site. My preference is to finish because of water, right? The worst thing that can happen is on the install process, water gets in. And so you really want to work with really experienced installers who know what they're doing. So they seal for water first and then do the rest.
So now I know with healthcare, it's a whole other world regarding mechanical, regarding plumbing, regarding electrical, regarding air filtration, all kinds of stuff like that. It's probably at the upper echelon of the highest quality it should be done. How extreme do you guys get? Like, are there certain facilities that are designed slightly different when you have different kinds of healthcare machinery going in there? I'm assuming that that's how it's designed for you, for them.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So we whether it's we'll use MRI and CT as an example, or MRI. Yeah. It requires shielding. And so we have a really good collaboration with a company called SDI that specializes in these type of cassette buildings and shielding. And then we still do all the rest of the work. But yes, there's definitely some specialty areas that we collaborate with others who have, you know, deep expertise in those areas.
That's interesting. And so now I want to get into the custom side of the world, right? Or I guess with educational, it's not as difficult as the healthcare institute, but you're still creating these units that are far better than what we were all used to growing up. Portable. You know, because we've shared our time in portables and they were just rickety boxes, cardboard.
Yeah, so
crap.
The portables of today are not.
They don't. No, no, do they still make those things?
We do. Yeah, we make them.
Really?
A lot of others make them, but they have a full HVAC unit in them, cold heating, air filtration, you know, they're completely different than they were when we went to school. Absolutely.
So how do they feel when you're inside these units?
They feel like you're in a regular school classroom.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Bob's been in them.
And I just figured that because I'm watching the construction of it, so I already have an idea of how they feel, which makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is where the majority of the government is going to keep on pushing to try to get this, because you can start building these infrastructures a lot faster.
Yes,
and you're saying 30 to 50%?
Faster.
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 Cost-wise, though?
So cost-wise, it is always a complicated situation. So we ensure cost certainty as a modular builder, and I'll get more into it. We have the same material costs and the same labor costs as traditional construction. There's no way to get around that.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. We produce a higher quality product. In a lot of cases, in almost all cases, and I not to say anything bad about traditional construction, but the elements don't help, right? So we're able to control it, and that's why the end product often has higher quality. The difference is we're 30 to 50% faster. And so when you do a project and you analyze it, financing costs, soft costs, construction costs, etc., like McKinsey says that modular is 20 to 30% less expensive every time on a full analysis basis. So you have to take into
account. That's a blanket, though.
It is. So I would say probably different in different industries and different builds will be different. What we do, though, that's very different than traditional construction. Traditional construction, you get a square footage cost.
Yep.
Ultimately, by the end of the project, you're often double because of change orders.
Yeah.
We do not like change orders in modular. Change orders in modular messes our whole production line up. So we will ask you pick light switches, paint colors, everything day one. So the way our process would work is designs are done. A bill of materials is created. From that bill of materials, that's every product we need to build the thing, build the final product. From that bill of materials, supply chain, sourcing, purchasing, etc., and then schedules developed. And so long lead items are purchased first. And then, you know, the items that aren't as long lead get purchased later.
What kind of long lead items are today?
Doors, the same as always. Doors, windows, electrical boxes, the same sort of lighting fixtures. Okay. So we often all work with the customer and say, hey, this is 28 weeks. This is 15 weeks. Pick which one you want, right? As an alternative to what you spec'd.
Yeah.
Once that material comes in, we start building. And we don't want any interruptions going down.
All of the material has to arrive, right?
Not all of it, but all of it needs to arrive when it's due on the production line. So if you change something, it could stall the entire production line and process. And so modular is that much faster because it's like a car assembly line. It's pushing down the line. And so every day we have an inventory section under lock and key. Every day we generate what's called a pick list. So the materials that are required for that day for each station are generated, and the material handlers pick the material from the inventory system or inventory section and bring it to the workers at their station. And so that allows the speed. So you don't see people walking around the plant carrying 2x4s on their shoulder.
Everybody's and all on this. The same page.
Yeah. So it's like a symphony.
Yeah. I mean, which is nice because now you have all the workforce and the designers, everybody working together, and they're working off of the same book.
Exactly. So that's where you get your cost certainty, because you don't have change orders, because we don't want change orders. We don't want to disrupt our production. It's different, right? We're building everything in the same location. So if we delay a project, all the other projects coming after
are will affected. Get delayed. They domino. Are.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which you don't want to have.
No.
So basically you handle that problem before it even arises.
Exactly.
And that's the way it should be done.
Right.
I wish that could happen in regular construction, but it doesn't happen in regular construction because they take advantage of those situations.
Well, I would just say it's a different process and it's not always their fault. Like sometimes customer has too many options. A customer could be slow on picking stuff. So it's just an industry method that probably needs adjustment over time to be more efficient.
Now, are your units going to every single province and territory, or how far have they gone across the country?
Not yet. So we've gone as far as Manitoba, west, but we can go to BC. And we have a contract signed in Nova Scotia, and we can go all the way to PI. It's fine.
Have you guys entered the U.S. market yet?
Not yet, but we're working
on it. How is the U.S. market when it comes to modular? I'm sure you've done some research and data.
Yeah, so hovering around the 2% mark, so not that much.
So they're twice as big as us, but then again, they're 10 times as big as us,
yes,
population-wise, right?
Yeah, so probably worse per capita than us right now. But I think we see a lot quicker adoption there than here.
Are there any cool social media influencers in construction that are doing modular exclusive?
I don't know of any. Yeah, I haven't seen, but there are a lot of one-off posts. There was a New York Times article written recently about a Swedish manufacturing plant doing modular. That was a really neat article. So you're starting to see it more and more in the mainstream. And I think why North America now? Because the need is now. In Europe, they had a major need after wartime, etc. Yep. Like there was a major effort to rebuild. And we haven't had that here. And so now we're facing infrastructure shortages for the first time probably in our history. And that's why I think that the turn to modular, because of the speed.
I really wish, because I keep on trying to remind the Americans that they're not the epicenter of construction. As much as they keep on saying that they are, they're not, right?
Yeah.
I think the epicenter is coming from Europe. I think what they're doing, because of the exact same reasons that you just shared right now, right? I think that they would do, and us as well, we would do ourselves a huge favor if we started paying attention more to what's being built there, because they know how to be more efficient. They know how to, erect certain buildings quicker and how to tie them all in properly, because they still, for the better part of Europe, still has winters, they still have cold weather, they still have seasons going on the same way that we do, not to the extreme that we have, but they still have figured out these things. And that's why I'm thinking, if you're a builder here in North America, start paying attention to what's going on outside of North America.
Yeah, I think worldwide, we need to pay more attention to what everyone else is doing. And now there's a big push like across the globe on decarbonization and net zero, etc. And what I say is modular is the only way to get there, because you can deconstruct the building. A traditional building, you have to knock it down. You can essentially recycle a modular building if required.
You can disconnect it and then ship it someplace else.
Yeah, refurbish, ship it again. And so you can't get to net zero if you knock down a building. It's impossible. No matter what materials you use, no matter what the operational standards are, passive house, LEED, doesn't matter. If you knock it down at the end, you'll still be you'll still have a carbon footprint.
Here's a question for you. Have you guys done some studies on how long your units are going to last? Because I've always said that the current subdivision typical home today is about 19 weeks of construction from the time they take a hole in the ground to the time that the turnkey and they're moving in, right? Those homes are not going to be century homes. They will never last to the point of what we're so familiar with. Out in Hamilton or in Toronto area, we know what century homes are all about, how they were built by a different workforce, by a different standard.
Yep.
That's all been removed from that. So what are you guys looking at regarding your units and longevity on those units?
Yeah, so it's all based on spec. But what I can tell you is, in order to transport a modular unit, the G-force of the truck and the torquing of the crane is very aggressive. And so our structural product needs to be sound enough to take that G-force and torquing. And so we very often are more robust than traditional construction. So our products can last 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, depending on how they're built. But we can never build, let's say, a stick frame that can't withstand that in transportation. And so we
No, it's impossible.
It's impossible, exactly. Yeah. It will fall apart. Yeah. So it has to be more robust. And so we do wood, steel, and hybrid. Because we do a lot of healthcare, we do a lot of steel. But we have done wood and we have done hybrid, and but we have to do it structurally sound enough to take that G-force and torquing.
I know that a lot of people, C-cans were the biggest thing for, I guess, the last 10, 15 years, whatever. The thing is, I haven't seen a C-can that doesn't feel or smell or look like a C-can.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's great that you're trying to do something different, but it's still limitation-wise regarding C-cans. So when you guys come up with yours, it's all in the scope of C-can, but it's not.
Yes.
Size-wise is what I mean, scope-wise. Like, the dimensions are similar, but the quality is not the same thing.
So your C-can, C-can footprints are 8x20, 8x40, 10x10, 8 feet tall, 9 feet tall. So limited in dimension.
Yeah.
Our frames, we can build whatever size you want. You can build 12 feet wide, 16 feet wide. Really, you can build 24 feet wide, but you can't
transport.
Ship it. Right. So you do two 12s and you get your 24 feet. We can build 60 feet long, 70 feet long, right? And then, like I said, 13 and a half feet tall. So you'll never get that from a C-can. You just can't get it, right?
You have to start plasma cutting, opening exactly. up, and then attaching stuff together, yeah. right?
And that being said, we do use them for emergency management, field hospitals, military field hospital, let's call it, because military moves C-cans around. And so one of our first products was building a field hospital during COVID or a hospital room that could do, and we filed a number of patents around it. It could do negative, positive, neutral pressure, air filtration, air exchanges, HEPA filtration, dehumidification, temperature control. Had it tested by the University Health Network, their healthcare human factors team, including the doctors at Toronto General, so top three hospital in the world. And so everybody's really paying attention to that product because it's a real alternative if something goes wrong. Like COVID, when you put up a tent, you can't do high acuity cases. It's just not feasible to treat really sick people in a tent.
Yep.
And so that's an alternative in a field setting or an emergency setting.
And so back to how many are you producing? You're producing 11 or 12 per day?
We can do 12 per day off each of our, so if all six lines are running at full tilt, 12 per day, 12 units per day.
And how long does it take one unit in general?
So I'll give you one example because it's different.
Yeah,
it's really hard. Yeah. So hospitals are different than schools are different than housing. But let's say after a 23-day ramp, we can do 12 a day.
So basically from start to finish is a 23-day ramp.
Post-design. Yeah.
Once that's already been approved and you've got your
materials are ready.
Everything's all ready to go. You're 23 days.
Yeah.
And you've got a unit ready for travel.
Exactly.
And you can create 12 of those in one day.
Per day. Yep. At full tilt. Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah. It's
fast. That's insane.
Yeah.
So it's like there's constantly hustle and bustle going on inside the warehouse there that it just keeps on moving.
Exactly.
But you've got a whole team that's doing the design process, the permit process, the structural process. Then you get all the material signs off and then you give it to the workforce and now they assemble everything.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, like I said, it's more like a manufacturing process or industrialized construction than regular construction because everyone has their assigned tasks. You have material handlers, you have production managers, and you know, people who schedule not just, so you have people who schedule the projects, people who schedule the plant, what happens in the plant on each line, when does a project start and stop. So all of that coordination has to be done.
Now, you mentioned housing.
Yes.
Are we ever going to get to the point where you're thinking about custom housing?
Yeah.
Or is that...
I think that's far away for us.
It's a lot of variables when you start getting clients coming in.
Yeah, so, and we don't sell direct to consumer, right? We're always either, like, I would say 80 to 90% of our sales are to government.
Okay.
And, or government or quasi-government. So, like, let's say federal government, provincial government, municipal governments, then quasi-government, like school boards, hospitals, military. It's all...
What's the housing that you are... because you're doing healthcare, you're doing schooling, you're doing housing.
Yeah, so housing would be if there's government procurement on housing. Got it. Then I get into my, let's say, 10 to 20% that's not government. We could do mining. So mining companies are private, so we can do healthcare facilities and housing for mines, oil and gas, and then private developers is where the other, or not-for-profits.
Yeah, so basically you also get into the construction. And
exactly.
I mean, we're so used to seeing C-cans,
yes,
or those units that we've seen so many times. They're just stacked on top of each other, and each C-can is a different division of the construction company.
Yep.
But I've been in them before. I've had meetings and talked to people, and I'm like, yeah, I'm in a C-can right now. The only difference is I'm on land.
Right.
That's the only difference here,
not
right?
On ship.
So it still feels like it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes more sense that you tackle those as well. But, I mean, the hospital makes a lot of sense. Schools make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But it just almost, the technology, it's almost like you got to build another plant to handle the custom side of the world. But then you already know there's going to be a world of headaches there.
Yeah. And I don't know that we'd ever get into direct to consumer.
Like, yeah,
we sell through others. And for me, modular in a lot of ways, you do better when there's repeatability in the build. And so when you're getting into this really custom items, or people, you can imagine if someone's building a multi-million dollar custom home, they want to be able to change what they want, when they want, how they want. And so that's not good for modular. And that's why I would say we'd stay out of that space.
How advanced are the units becoming? Because I can only assume installation-wise, technology-wise, I guess just like digital capacities.
Yep.
Like you have certain toys, like especially the healthcare ones. You have certain toys that have to be in there. But then the wall assemblies have to be a certain thickness as well, too. So, are you guys using newer products, newer ideas that could be more compact regarding the wall assembly?
Yeah, so we are always looking at what's the latest and greatest. So we have a mandate internally for ESG or EDI. And these things are important. And, you know, people think, oh, if you do ESG right, you can't be profitable.
I don't even know.
So like environmental, social governance, or your equality, diversity, inclusion, these things.
That's why I don't know them.
Yeah. You don't like this topic. But
okay, please explain. Okay. Yeah.
So what I say is, and this goes back to your decarbonization, if you do ESG properly, in my opinion, so people say, oh, ESG is not profitable. Like, if you do this stuff, then you can't be profitable.
Okay.
And I say the opposite. I say, from a governance perspective, if you're running a for-profit business, ESG means you have to be profitable because you're running a for-profit business. Like, your governance, right? So this is the importance of it. And so So what we do is we try to find alternatives to some of the building products that are we use that are new in the marketplace that don't increase costs, but they increase sustainability. So
what's a product that you can think of that's kind of coming down that pipe like that?
So really new, I'm not sure it's ready for market yet, but we're paying close attention to it with some of our friends at Gracious Living. So hemp panels.
Oh, I've been looking at a bunch of hemp stuff.
Absolutely.
There's a fabricator who's making hemp bricks and blocks. And I'm like, this should be used.
Exactly.
Like, when I looked at the data and I looked at what it was all about, I'm like, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so we're looking at it closely. And so when it's ready for market, and we'll see if we can get some specs around it. And then...
But hemp's also got insulation factors as well,
it
too, right?
It does. It has our value built in. It
does. Huge.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand why we don't... I don't know.
It's hard. I mean, so I tell this story all the time. Some people like it, some people don't. Not really a story, an anecdote. And I heard it from someone else and have used it since. If we cryogenically freeze a pilot and you cryogenically freeze a bricklayer and you wake them up 25 years later, the pilot can't fly the plane, but the bricklayer can still lay brick because nothing changes in construction. And so we are really trying to disrupt the construction industry for what we do anyways, to push the boundaries, to do things different, because it's not sustainable the way it is. We have decrease in skilled labor. Like, we just can't build the same way. We don't have enough volume of people to help us build. And the materials that we have need to change over time, right? We're running, I would say, virgin aggregate. It's not going to be a thing in 50 years from now. And so what are we doing to swap that out or to find alternatives? Nothing right now. But we, as Farrell, we're really thinking about that stuff.
But you give the hemp block to that mason 100 years in the future, it's in the shape of a block. That mason's going to figure it out.
They can install it 100%.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's actually a really good analogy to look at that way. So what other little things are you guys are looking at trying to figure out where can we improve? Because I really want that to filter to just mainstream construction,
So I would say even on the QAQC process, like that is extremely important. Like to us, when we delivered our hospital to Winnipeg, like most of the time when you deliver modular, you have to adjust the door frames when you get on site, right? I don't know how many doors there were. There was a lot of doors in that building.
The doors are already installed in the warehouse.
Everything's installed. So 90% finish in our warehouse when it gets delivered to site. There's only 10% left to do on-site work. So flooring's installed, walls are installed, lighting's installed, even certain medical devices if necessary, chalkboards or whiteboards. I don't even know if they use chalkboards anymore.
But probably, they should.
Probably not.
No,
probably
they're not. Whiteboards.
So whiteboards. All that stuff's installed in our plant. But when we delivered that hospital, they only had to adjust one door. And it's because of the precision that happens in our plant that really, really allows us to get stuff to site in a condition that, again, doesn't happen in traditional because those QAQC processes aren't in place.
It would fall apart.
Yeah.
What was the issue with the one door?
I really don't. Probably I think the door frame just needed a bit of jigging or adjusting, tightening.
And it was just by fluke or whatever, something happened.
Probably, I mean, transported.
You didn't have to replace the door.
Nope.
You just had to adjust
just
the door.
That was it. Yep.
And that was it.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
I don't know. What I would say is...
So it's been, 4 years since you took over and started tackling it?
So 2020, I started the company. We can talk about... So I had sold or exited from my previous business. COVID hit. And I say, and a lot of people have heard me tell the story, I was sitting at home talking to my dogs and my walls in a very unhealthy way.
Who was answering?
No one. That's why it probably
wasn't
great.
As long as nobody was answering, then you're okay. All right.
No ghosts, no dogs, okay. No one answering. And so I said, okay, I have to do something. And COVID was pretty impactful for me. My mom's a double lung transplant recipient. My brother is an anesthetist, so intubating COVID patients. Sister-in-law is a nurse. They had a six-month-old at home. And then my grandfather passed during the first wave. And it was the first time I couldn't stay in hospital with him. And so in my wisdom, I said, I have to do something. Like, something needs to be done here. So I decided I was going to revolutionize healthcare globally. Like, just crazy things. So that's when I built the hospital room in a box with a manufacturing partner and then had it tested. And then the rest is history. Really, the company couldn't grow until we brought manufacturing in-house. Like, it was limited what we could do. Yeah. We could... take on a job, design, sub out. Like there was really limitations to what we can do. And so our business plan was always to bring manufacturing in-house. And when the opportunity came for us to do that acquisition, we took it. And so really, we've only had in-house manufacturing from September of last year. So not very long.
It took that long to just get it ramped up to the point where you can get manufacturing on board?
Until we could buy something that made sense. So it took me a long time to find an acquisition target that made sense.
Is Elliston regretting? No.
Pardon?
Are they regretting?
I don't think so. I think, like, you know, they're a massive company that does massive things.
They're not hurting.
You know, $6 billion in infrastructure across our country.
Yeah.
And this was a small division for them, for sure.
Anybody else in the market? Like, are we seeing more and more players come into the market now?
For sure. So you may have seen recently ATCO announced the acquisition of NRB, and they want to do more permanent modular. So I think there's a lot of people looking at this industry. For me, this is the future of construction. It really is. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of movement in the next, 5 to 10 years. People ask me, where do I want to go with this? I've had a lot of companies bought and sold.
I can see the workforce growing dramatically in the next decade.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for me, I want to, with our team, of course, and I say me, I can't do this by myself. There's tons of people helping. But we want to build the biggest modular company in the world. that's where we want to be. There's a lot of white space. There's a lot of small players. There's a lot of, let's say, not a lot of sophistication in the industry globally. And so we really want to impact globally. And then one of the things I'm proud of, going back to the sort of EDI, which is not a topic you like, is that we're majority female owned, majority female at our board level, majority female or 50% female at our executive level, and then 30% of our direct labor force is female, when the industry average is under 12. So really,
it's actually
impactful.
A lot less than that. The industry average in Canada is actually 4%.
Crazy. That's crazy.
In America, it's a little bit higher.
Crazy.
Right. But then again, population wise, it's a different ballgame. I don't even know what it is in Europe, though. But you guys are at
30%. 30%. Yeah.
How did you guys score that? Like,
so again, it's a controlled environment, right? I look at working on site, porta potty. That's just one example.
Yeah, you guys don't have porta potties. No, you actually have bathrooms.
So it makes sense. Everyone's life a lot easier.
Yeah.
You know, water stations. People are carrying materials to you. You're not carrying materials. So the conditions in our factory make it conducive to female working.
But then it also makes it conducive to male working as well, too.
It does, 100%.
That's why I was saying that I could definitely see this one segment, and to all the kids that are listening, because there's a lot of kids that are in school trying to figure out where their next move is, if it's not going to be a barista, that this is an option for them. They don't have to be on a typical Canadian winter construction site.
Yes.
You could be inside your facility working away, doing the exact same thing that you would be doing on a construction site, but you're doing it indoors.
Indoors a lot.
You don't have to wear layers.
Correct. Yeah.
You just got to wear your PPE and your vest, and that's it. Simple as that, right?
Yeah, full PPE, yeah.
Yeah, and then absolutely. you do your job that you learn so much.
Yep.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you guys is there a modular trade show annually?
Yes, there is.
I know there's a trade show for everything, right?
Yes. Modular Building Institute.
What time of year is it, like?
World of Modular, so it was in March.
Okay.
Next year, it's a running joke amongst this, like, my friends in Modular. Next year, it's in Vegas in April. It happens to be on my birthday.
So first time it's going to be in Vegas?
No, so it's been switching between Orlando, Vegas, Orlando, Vegas.
Oh, so they're doing the exact same thing as an International Builders Show.
They do, yeah.
And then the Kitchen and Bath Show as well. So they're in April. So yeah, IBS happens in January, late January, early February. Yeah. Same time for KBIS. And now you guys are going to April. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and this year was March. The next year is in April. So
okay.
Yeah. So that's probably the biggest modular show in the world. They're having World of Modular in Europe this year too.
Where,
in
Germany?
Brussels.
Oh, Brussels, okay.
Can't remember when that is, later on in the year this year. I think the team just elected a new president, John Bongiorno from Axis Construction in the US, and they do a lot of healthcare installs alongside Jim Gabra, ModLogic in the US, who builds a lot of modular healthcare like us. So very similar to us, but they're US based.
Okay. And then they're, so the world one is much bigger than the North American one, or is it the same size kind of show?
So World of Modular, we don't have a Canadian one. So World of Modular is really a mainly North American show, and they're trying to branch out. So this year is the first time they're doing Europe, I think.
Oh, so it's the same show, but they're going. And when is it going to be in Brussels? What time of year?
Later this year. I can't remember what the dates
are,
but it's
like,
yeah,
like that?
I think so. Yeah.
So is it going to be the first time that they're going to Europe to do
I
it?
I believe so, yeah.
Which is really weird because modular, in my opinion, started in Europe.
Yeah, so I think there may be other modular shows right, in Europe. Modular Building Institute, majority of members are in North America, and they're trying to expand the membership to Europe and everywhere else in the world because, you know, modular is a community everywhere, really.
So I'd love to get your opinion. I mean, you came from the outdoor industry and dealing with asphalt, but now you come into the structural industry and now you're building. But what do you like? Because obviously you're designing certain things and you have a team that designs certain things for certain applications and they have to be, there's a lot of guidance. There's a lot of strict guidance on what has to be built there. Yeah. But I'm sure that you still have influence on why don't we look at things a little like this or like that, or what you're learning, what you're researching. And so I want to pick your brain on that.
Yeah. So I love this way more because there's so much more to it. And me, I am one who relentlessly pursues knowledge and growth. And so here the sky's the limit. right? In the road building industry, there's limitations to how far you can go. Like, there are different types of mixes, you know, warm mix, different kinds of plants. At the time, we had worked on, like, the first green asphalt plant in Canada. So there are things you can
do. What's a green asphalt plant?
Like, zero emission plant, you know, greener.
What's it made out of?
No, it's made out of the same materials. It's a process that emits less emissions.
Okay.
But there, you know, there's certain things that you can influence. You pave a road very similar, like the bricklayer for 100 years, same types of equipment, and the material mixes, the engineers drive what those are. Usually the consultants for the municipality or the province, et cetera, drive what those are. And so they're only a range of things. They're not ready for synthetic aggregates. They're not ready for, you know, we saw a reduction in recycling asphalt versus an increase in recycling over the last few years. In modular, the sky's the limit. It really is. The way we build,
it's
the
type of materials we use.
It is, it is. And the applications of it, like, even you can do modular drive-throughs, modular banks, modular, like, the sky is the limit in terms of what we can produce. Modular industrial enclosures, battery storage, energy storage, like some of our friends do. You can do modular data centers. Like, really, there's so much that's possible with modular, and even hybrid. Like, one of the things we talk about often is how many projects would have been better if they were done hybrid. An example of that is long-term care facility that came out of our plant before we took over the operations. The podium was built traditional.
Okay.
One tower was traditional, one was modular. We recently had a health authority from Western Canada come and visit us, and we toured them through the long-term care home, and we asked them which tower is modular, which is traditional, and they couldn't tell us. And so in an example like that, you could have done over and over again modular, a traditional podium, and all the patient rooms or resident rooms modular. And sometimes that marriage of both types of construction really, really works in those big projects.
Is it an option, Sabrina? I'm just thinking, because my wheels are spinning.
Yes.
Couldn't you take your facility and park it on a location and build that facility? If it's, because now you can start building bigger than your limitations on transport, right?
Yeah.
So couldn't you do that? Like, is that a possibility?
So you mean build another facility to build?
No, like, you wanted to build a bigger structure. So I know we talked about earlier about limitations on here in Canada, how high, how big you can go.
Yeah.
And then each unit has to be a certain configuration because of transport delivery components, right? Yeah. But then couldn't you take your facility and kind of make a mobile version of it, park it somewhere, and just start turning out all the components you needed to build this much bigger structure that wouldn't be able to transport?
So you're talking like maybe like a kit of parts that you can assemble.
Yeah.
So there are modular builders that do that.
Oh, they're doing
it. Panelized modular, what we would call like a panelized system, where they'll install, they'll do, maybe we call it a kit of parts.
But the mating part is the part that I have a problem with, the panelization version of it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's fine. It'll all work, and it works fine. And there's a lot of companies that do that well. We do full volume. Like, that is our sweet spot, and we want to do full volume. For me, if our plant was busting at the seams and we're at full capacity, I'd build another plant. I build another plant in Eastern Canada. I build another plant in the U.S. Like, I'd build another plant in Europe. I'd be happy to do that or acquire other plants.
Because then you can start building in those areas,
exactly.
Right?
Like, then it makes a shipping.
I'm trying to figure out, like, it kind of makes sense cost-wise that you become even more efficient now.
Yep.
You park the plant where you need to build the units.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then you don't have to worry about transport at that point.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, yes, it could work. I'm not sure it would work in volumetric modular because, like, I look at the size of our plant, the ability of that, why we can produce as fast as we can is the size and layout and sort of processes in that plant. So 300,000 square feet, hard to pick that up and replicate somewhere else and still get that same speed, volume, process pumping through a plant.
So if you want to get a tradesperson coming into your business and they want to work for you, what's the mindset that they should have?
I would say, like, work hard, no different than anyone else. I say, you know, if you work hard, anything's possible.
Mm-hmm.
just a good attitude, collaboration. Like a lot of what we do requires a lot of collaboration between the trades, between like our team in-house, subcontractors, suppliers. And so there's a lot of collaboration, but have fun doing it. Like, I think if you're not having fun at work, why? Like, why go to work? It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then like be it's comfortable, right? There's water stations, washrooms.
Like civilization. Yeah, I get it, right? It kind of makes sense. So has the government been very supportive of this? They see that there's huge potential here?
They have. We've gotten money from government as well. We got through the Ontario Centre of Innovation, Life Sciences Innovation Fund. We got debt from them, which was great. And then from the federal government, FedDev Business Scale-Up Program, $3.5 million in interest-free debt from them. So really helped propel the company forward. So government is supportive. And I know government at all levels is supportive of modular right now.
Well, because they see the possibilities behind it.
Absolutely.
They don't know how to do it, but that's why they rely on somebody like you.
Absolutely.
So you can educate them on how to pull this off, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And you guys, you have a team that keeps on growing, that you're adding more and more people into the think tank, right?
Yeah, so we're at 70 people today. We're projecting to be at 120 people
that's
by
including
the end of
the workforce,
year.
Or is that just...
That's including the workforce.
Okay.
Yeah, and then by the end of the year, we should be up around 120 and growing. And so we are scaling very, very quickly.
After a year?
After a year. Wow. Not even a year.
Yeah, less than a year.
We bought the plant in September. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we supplement with subcontractors, right? There's, like, we might never do mechanical, electrical, plumbing, like your MEP subcontractors in-house. So we sub it out. No different than a GC. Like a GC would
they
sub
come
out
in,
your MEP.
That's your location. Exactly. That's your scope. Take care of it.
And I find that subcontractors like it better too, because all their guys are in one place, under one roof, everybody's sort of on the same page, doing the same thing, you know, all health and safety is happening. And so I think, you know, even the subs, they're no different than our own team, right? They like working inside the same way.
No, of course, totally. Yeah. I'm just curious, and I mean, you probably get a sense that I'm not a huge fan of the government, but that's just my opinion. Are they trying to push more like the green, their idea of green? Everything electricity-based, everything. Is solar panel even a conversation? I remember being in high school in the 80s, and it was like solar panel this, solar panel that. And I'm like, there's pros and cons, right?
So I agree. It's funny you said that. I remember reading a high school textbook that said, or an elementary school textbook that said solar power is good. And I said, okay, could be. But where is the pros and cons? So I had the same conversation, like let people have independent thought and think for themselves as to what's good and what's not. And we can all agree to disagree on what it is and isn't. But the thought process, the critical thinking needs to be there.
Yep.
And it wasn't when I saw the textbook. So,
but they have those initiatives. So I guess
there's
a lot of these there's heat pumps going on. It's basically all electrical.
So I would say it's still a big mix, right?
Oh, is it still a mix?
It's good to hear that.
It's a mix, right?
Yeah, and different people spec, like different municipalities, different builders, different governments spec different things. Like some people might spec passive house standards. Some in some industrial or different kinds of buildings, you see the LEED, silver, LEED, gold, et cetera, et cetera. Some is regular spec meet building code, right? Then there's some building codes where there's another in some municipalities that have other layers of compliance, SB10, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really all over the map. What I will say is people fundamentally understand, like if I'm delivering to a remote indigenous community in northern Canada where there's a ton of snow, like solar panels aren't going to cut it without battery backup, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you know the story.
Yeah.
Like it's practical in some places, not practical in others.
Yeah.
In Canada, harder because we have winter.
Yep.
And so you need backup systems or a system that combines solar and battery and et cetera. But we build what's spec'd. Right? Like if someone specs it, then we will build it. If someone doesn't spec it, we will build it in a different way.
But that spec also includes location.
It does. It has to.
It has to, right?
It has
so it's like you're not building something that's for Toronto.
Right.
The same way you're building something for Nunavik.
Correct. No,
you
there's
can't.
No way you can. It's
because
impossible.
It's not going to survive. It won't work.
It won't perform.
So it's good that you guys are paying attention to that. Yeah. It's nice to hear that there's a mix now because that's construction. I don't like politicians telling construction that you have to build this way because these are our political speaker box sounding points.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in construction.
Yeah. I think ultimately the building codes are going to dictate, like, your national building code, provincial building codes, et cetera. So no one, because of your building codes and inspectors, et cetera, can build something that doesn't work. It's just, it can't, it will never happen. It'll never pass. You'll never pass code. You'll never get permits.
Are you, is the passive community hanging out with you guys and talking to you guys, or?
Yeah, so of course, I think it's...
Well, they're an interesting bunch of people, right? Because they have some good ideas to a lot of details of construction.
Yeah.
But for you to tell me to create the whole structure all of that way doesn't work for me.
So, okay, so we're, again, flexible modular. We can build whatever's spec'd. And so we need to know what the spec is in the beginning. And so, like, passive house can really work. The issue of adoption is, in the first instance, like LEED, passive house can be more expensive.
Yep.
But then your operating costs can go down significantly. Yep. And so it's the customer needs to understand the balance there and then make a decision on what they want to do. Like, we don't have an issue building to passive house standards at all, as long as we know the spec from day one.
If it works, right?
Yeah, yeah, if it works.
It's just because I know that they have some, a religion on how thick walls or how things detail should be done.
Right.
And it affects, I don't know if it's quite the marrying type right now for modular.
It will work.
Some ideas will work, yeah, but not all the ideas will work.
Yeah, I can't comment on what works and what doesn't. It has to be building code.
Like, yeah,
for me, building code is it. You have to meet building code. You can show me whatever design you want. We can optimize it for modular. But if it doesn't meet building code, it doesn't mean anything.
Of course, right.
So I think that's the important piece there.
So what are you excited about in the next 5 years, I guess, outside of building plants everywhere all over Canada and having so many units being sold? You know, that would be great. But what else are you excited about?
Yeah, I think just changing public perception around modular. Like, that's super important to me, to show the general public that we can build in modular no different than traditional infrastructure, whether it's hospitals, full hospitals, or housing, or schools, or industrial complexes, offices, etc. And it looks the same, and it performs better in a lot of cases, and it's higher quality. And so changing public perception towards modular so we can help the industry as a whole. Like, I want to see our industry grow and be what it is in Europe.
I think you got to get rid of that word modular.
I know a lot of people.
Because the thing is, like I said at the very beginning, when I was walking through that video and I was looking at it, and like you were mentioning how you had two towers that were being built, two structures, and they couldn't tell which one was and wasn't. I'm like, it's that word that's already defining to people when they already conjure up their own image of it. And if you're old enough, they go back to a portable. That's their thought process of a modular unit or a C-can. And I think another word needs to be...
Yeah, so we've kicked around everything. Industrialized construction, prefab, factory built.
Prefab's the same thing as modular. Thing,
right? So factory built. And same it's thing. Also difficult, but the difficulty is creating a new word. Having people understand what that means.
Oh, government adoption comes up with new words all the time.
Yeah, but our industry has to sort of...
I think it's the modular. I think all these little words, prefab, modular, industrial, like, I don't know. To me, it's either a hospital, it's a school, it's a house. Yes,
exactly. And how it's built is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's built to building code. I agree with you.
Right?
I agree with you. Yeah.
So I guess because we in construction use stick framing as a term.
We do, yeah.
Which is what that, or you can do either concrete, which is more of a European style, right? But I think someone needs to come up with a new word. That's not my job.
I'm just
you guys figure it out. But I think a new word needs to be designed that encompasses all of that.
Yeah.
So then it doesn't feel as if it's that typical go-to portable kind of C-can mentality.
Or manufactured buildings.
Manufactured, yeah.
Manufactured buildings.
Some sort of custom or some, I don't know what it is, but something, right?
Yeah, we'll work on
it. I could see that. I could see that happening. So, but I think, unfortunately, you might get some homeowners that will come at you and go, we want to build our custom home.
Absolutely.
Which is such a can of worms. You know that. You know that from being in the industry.
Yes, 100%.
You know, sure, we'll build it, but you guys have to stay out of the can.
Right, which is very difficult when you're doing high-end custom, right?
Like,
again, they're paying that premium because they want to be able to do what they want, when they want, how they want. And it's fair. Like, that's why they're paying a premium for it, right?
luxury finishes or anything like that? No, you're not messing around with that
yet.
We
can, for sure. No, like hospital is going to be your highest end and most expensive per square foot build because of the finishes, the like medical gases, et cetera, et cetera. Just the complexity of the build, your HVAC system. And so we can, for sure, do luxury finishes. But again, I don't think that at least our business, there's a lot of, not a lot, but there are some companies that do higher end cottages, right? Modular. And they've been doing it for a really long time and they're really well known. And they get into those sort of higher end finishes, et cetera, and sell direct to customer, which is all fine. It's just the way our plant is built is really for production.
It's not designed for that. Exactly. Quite yet,
right? That's right. Right.
I could see that. It makes sense. I mean, I'm personally a fan of the mirrored cottages, right?
Yep.
Unless I was an animal in the woods and then I see a mirror. It's just like, it's nice that it disappears in the forest.
I agree.
But I mean, yeah, I've seen some people, they're dabbling in that kind of world.
Yep.
Which makes a lot of sense, but it makes sense though that you're saying that your assembly line is designed a certain way.
Yes.
And we don't want to veer off of that line because it starts to create a bunch of problems that we don't have solutions for just yet.
Right.
Whether we will, that's a different story. We're just getting started, right?
Yeah. So we can build two ways. We can build static in place. So we can build the whole building together and then take it apart and not push it down the line. Or we can really build an assembly line where it gets pushed down the line.
Which one do you prefer?
Depends on the type of build.
Okay.
So I would say healthcare is more static in place, whereas education housing is more pushed down the line. And when I say pushed down the line, I mean we would literally push
really
the units down the line. Yeah, I think Bob has seen it.
Oh, yeah, I think so. So how far of a run are we talking about here? Like it's moving from one point to the next point by the time it gets to the end.
Yeah, so if you think of 300,000 square feet, so it's going half the length of the plant, I would say. And slightly moving every day.
It's just crawling or?
So at the end of the shift, once it's completed to a certain degree.
They move it to the next.
Yeah, they move it to the next station.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Who's in charge of that? The last trade that worked on it or the first trade that's going to work
on
it?
So the production team, our in-house production team.
They're responsible.
So it's not the subcontractors. It's our in-house production team that's responsible for moving stuff within our plant.
Do they feel like Hercules when they're trying to push the
Probably watching them.
Because you're building a whole structure and then you're moving a whole structure on wheels?
It's on wheels, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I didn't see. I don't think I saw that in the video. I got to check that. Was it there? Okay, that's pretty interesting.
And also they'll do.
On the exterior side of it.
We can build outside. Yeah, we can build outside. We can store outside. Like so the important thing is that let's say we're doing an install of 300 units, right? You can crane maybe 10, 12 a day. And so you need critical mass of units before you start shipping them to site because you don't want to mob and demob your crane because it's expensive to do that. And so we build up a critical mass. And because we have the storage, we're able to do that. We can keep the plant moving while we store units outside. And when we get to critical mass, then we can start shipping to the plant to the site. So you don't have to mob and demob cranes, et cetera.
We're getting close to the end, but I still want to ask you before I get to the 12 questions. Yes. Were you intimidated at any point coming into this space?
After asphalt.
I'm assuming because you probably jumped through enough hurdles there.
Yeah.
But coming into this space, you were completely confident and like pulling this off?
Look, you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So as an entrepreneur, if you don't have guts, you're dead, right? You really have to have very little fear to do these type of things, especially endeavors to this size. Right.
Yeah.
Like I hear a lot of negative talk about entrepreneurs. Right. And it really bothers me. Like people say, oh, like, look at this. They say these wealthy people or this blah, 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 or this entrepreneur, this or that. And I think like, look what it takes to get here. I work 7 days a week. Like I have sacrificed, let's call it having a family up until now because I've worked and I've killed myself to work. I've had personal guarantees on different businesses that I've built. I've put life savings into businesses over the years. And then every night I go home and I think, if this doesn't work, how many families am I going to affect? How many, not just families of our Feral team, but how many subcontractors and their families and suppliers and their families? Like, what does this actually mean, what I'm doing? And I live with that. I live with that every day. And I move forward through that every day. And so I think it's important for the general public to understand the, I don't know how little fear you have to have in order to do that. Like, you know, it's
very just guts, right?
Yeah, it is. Like, that's what, it's pure guts. It's
I've
pure
never guts. Been an office person.
Yeah.
And I don't, like, I mean, I've had my fair share of time walking through offices and you see all the cubicles.
Yeah.
And they're just basically almost like droids. They're just like doing their job and that's it. That's their.
But, and that's
it's
okay.
It's great they for them. Love that. But they it's love never, it. I would not want to be in that environment.
I couldn't do it either. Like, yeah. I think. You may or may not know this. I'm a lawyer by background. So I did M&A, on Bay Street for 10 years. So mergers and acquisitions. And I just wanted to do more. Like, and it's funny, I say, I felt like I was in a box in a lot of ways because I can only do what I was confined in. And now I build boxes. You know, so.
But you're building boxes better.
I am.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, we are.
So
our team
like
is.
Thinking outside the box and your building box is better. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, and it's also adding to the whole problems that we're trying to solve. Right.
Exactly. Which yeah. So we say at Ferro, we have solutions without limits. That's our tagline. And we say we're trying to deliver state-of-the-art cost-effective infrastructure to the most underserviced populations around the world. And whether that's hospitals for the sick or long-term care for the elderly, schools for our young and educated, infrastructure for indigenous communities or our vets or our military personnel, remote mining communities, it's all the same. These are all underserviced populations. Housing for the homeless, it's all underserviced populations.
Is the government doing anything about that?
They are. Yeah, they are. They're working on it. I know all three levels of government are working on modular housing strategies, and I believe we'll start to see different initiatives coming this year and next year. You heard about the feds. It was in the news about housing catalogs, the province talking about modular, etc.
The housing catalog?
Okay, we're not going to debate about
that. No, because I thought that was a bit of a punchline joke, right? Everyone knows that I'm not a fan of the current government. I know. Simple as that. Yeah. I understand that you're working with them, which is totally fine. Yeah. They're like a deer in the headlight. Like they just have a glazed look over their head.
It's hard because they have responsibility over so many different things. Like I do, I would find it very challenging to be a government official, especially at the higher levels. You're responsible for housing, for schools, for long-term care, for roads, for water, for, you know, on and on and on and
so
on.
As,
how do you balance
as
all
an entrepreneur?
That?
What would be the first thing that you would do if you had a grocery list of all these things to do? Do you
prioritize?
Thank you very much. That's where I was going.
The issue is we have crisis today, and that's why I sympathize with government. I really do, because we have crisis across multiple fronts. So how do you prioritize when you have crisis across? Right.
Start with one.
I know.
Then go to the next.
I think I would
stop giving money away. Start focusing on Canada.
We should focus on we. You know, we have a housing crisis.
I'm not a politician. Funny enough, though, Friday I was having a meeting. I just wanted to stop by a plumber friend of mine, and I got talking with his general manager, and she just started saying, "Why don't you run?" And I was like, "Why? I don't understand." But because then you could make a change or something like that. And I was like, "Or they can change me."
Could be.
There's always a variable on both ends there, right? So, but she kept on planting that over and over, and I kept on looking at him, going, and he just kind of raised his eyebrows, going, "Why don't you?" And I'm like,
"Will you?"
No, I don't, because I think I would just spat certain things that make sense, like prioritize. I would like, let's focus this, take care of this problem, problem solved. Yeah. Let's move to the next one.
Yeah. So I will say, one of good examples of government priorities is on the economic development side. Provincially, they focused on EVs, and whatever your feelings are, good or bad, about EVs, they focused on EVs. It's fine. It doesn't make a difference. But they
you haven't heard
on
the show, huh?
No, I've heard the show. That's why I said whatever your opinions are, good or bad, on EVs, and that's fine. But they focused on it, and they got stuff done. Like in terms of foreign direct investment, I think we're the highest in the world now because of that focus. And now they've said, okay, we've done enough in this area, and they've switched priority to life sciences, and now they're focusing on that. And so I think that's a good example of when government prioritizes and also works between multiple level of government. So the feds and the province work together on those initiatives, then it works, right? Can't be fighting each other because then it doesn't work. He wants to agree to disagree with me.
I could say something, but I don't want to say anything. No, Sabrina, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. I want to share all the information before I do the 12 questions. Yep. Faro International. And actually, as you were just talking just then, get rid of modular and just call them Faro.
Faro, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Like that's probably been on the whiteboard at the office.
Or yeah, something. Oh yeah, we've had a few whiteboarding sessions on, you know, branding, naming.
Kind of makes sense, no? www.farointl.com, info@farointl.com, and then on IG under Faro International, and then on LinkedIn it's under Faro International Inc. And then Twitter is under Faro INTL. You ready for these 12 questions?
Yes.
What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
Oh man. That's a hard one.
Really?
I would say, yeah. Well,
you're Italian, coming from Asheville, lawyer, and now you're a modular.
I know, because all the phrases have swear words in them.
So?
I said I wasn't going to swear.
It could be in Italian.
This podcast. Okay.
I won't put subtitles. Don't worry about it.
Okay, the funny, and this is probably not right to say it politically incorrect, but the Sicilian 3 inches on asphalt. This is something.
I know. I know exactly what you're talking about. What is your least favorite tool?
Oh, I have. I love tools.
There's not one tool that you do not like.
I love tools. Okay, let's say our steel saw, because I always worry about people getting hurt on this steel saw. Like I'm like, oh, if someone's
such an open wheel.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's probably my least favorite.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Not worrying about anything. Although I don't have a lot of fear, I do think about all the people I affect every day. And so I would say, good. You know, that worry.
Sure. What construction sound do you love?
Hammer.
Just a hammer hitting something? Oh, jackhammer.
Yeah.
Favorite beverage?
Water.
Just water?
Water.
What turns you on and off in construction?
Mess.
Turns you on?
Off, oh, no, it's off. Okay. Off. And clean job sites.
That one's been shared
clean
a few
factories,
times.
Clean factories, yeah. Including, it's funny because I was walking through the plant the other day and there was sawdust. And I said, guys, get rid of the sawdust, you know. And, of course, it's inevitable in construction.
No?
We're putting in a dust collector for that.
Favorite curse word?
Oh, there's too many to say. There's way too many. I said I wasn't going to swear on the
okay,
show.
Okay. Favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Oh, I'm a car girl. I love cars.
European, American, decade?
Lambo for sure.
Lambo. Over Ferraris?
Yes. And people will kill me for that because no. I'm Italian. But I just love Lambos.
I respect Lambo more than Ferraris.
I love them. Love.
Particular model?
I don't know why. I really love of course the Aventador is beautiful, etc. But I really love the Gallardo Spider. I love that car for
yellow?
Whatever reason.
What color?
White.
White? What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Venture capital investment.
What profession would you not like to attempt or do?
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them? Okay, what's on top of the list?
Dentist. I mean, I love my dentist, but I just don't want to do that.
Staring into people's mouths all day long.
Not for
eight hours a day.
Yeah.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
That I made a positive impact in the world by being in it.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks very much, Sabrina.
Thank you,
Bob, for setting this up.
Absolutely.
This has been a great conversation. I look forward to taking a look at the plant there and checking it out. I'm impressed. I'm very, very impressed, right?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you having me on. And obviously, thanks to Bob Orlick from Big Bot for setting it up for us.
Thanks. That's it. We're all done. Out of here.
You.
Okay. One more thing that's just been brought up as soon as we cut the show, but I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's talk Star Wars now. Yep. Like, what's going on here? You're talking about...
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a healthcare program. So, Canada Space Agency. So really, everyone talks about NASA, the U.S., space, et cetera, et cetera. So Canada's really focusing, the Canadian Space Agency is really focusing on healthcare and space. And so when you go to Mars, it's not like you can go to see a doctor. And how do you deal with that? And so they're really working hard on technology, including telemedicine, on bringing medical facilities and care to astronauts when you're doing deep space travel. And so we talk about building a hospital room in a box for space and these type of things. And of course, engineering is completely different. And the way you do it is completely different. And so there's a lot of companies working in and around this area to see what's going to happen in the future.
And you guys are dabbling in it right now? Or?
We looked at it very early days, and we're continuing to just monitor how it's going and where it's going and when it's going.
Well, I thought, like, wasn't there an announcement of somehow building a lunar base right now, trying to get something on the moon first before Musk takes off to Mars, right?
I believe so. I believe they're working on a number of different initiatives. And so I'm not super close to it, but you need the infrastructure. That's the reality. If you're going to keep people there for, a long time and you can't, get them out. So military, as an example, someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
In theory, you can get them out of that situation. If you're on Mars, you're not getting out. You need to be treated on site. And so how do you go about doing that? You got to find a way, right? And so there's a lot of research being done on how to treat on site when you're that remote, including, think about if you're trying to communicate back and forth, there's a significant delay. So even on a telemedicine side, or let's call it operating with robots, you have such a big delay just from the transmission back and forth. So how can you do that efficiently in deep space?
So talk about a transport problem, because you'd have to really limitation, like compared to the 400 series, right? Yeah, you got to fit inside of a spaceship.
Spaceships are big. But you have to fit in.
And so you guys are dabbling in, like, you're just inquiring about it.
We were working on, so there was.
How did that come up?
CSA issued a procurement process around ideas for, hospital room in a box, as an example.
Was the bottle cracked open or half used? Like, I don't understand how that comes up in a meeting where it's like, why don't we build a modular unit for space?
I think, so there's a whole, through Canada Space Agency, there's a whole healthcare initiative, wow. Right? And so it's a big deal. It's happening now. Lots of research.
See, to me, that's money well spent. Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me.
Yeah. Right? It's a long turnaround. So when we talk about the plant, we do things that are really quick, right? Like, small schools.
Yeah.
And then things that are longer, like hospitals. And so by doing that, you level out your peaks and valleys in the plant. So something like healthcare for space, that's a long sales cycle or a long process. And so we fill with other things in the meantime to ensure we can do both or do multiple things at once.
What else are you working on?
Top secret.
It's just like, if space is literally the one end, and then right here in our own backyard is another where you're doing well.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what else are you kind of?
Yeah, top
Antarctic? Like, you're going on extreme
coast? We can go to the extreme north. Absolutely. We haven't touched deep sea yet. That's too sensitive still.
But then you go to Antarctica and find out what the governments are all doing up there, down there, whatever it is. There's a lot of secrecy going on right now. You've heard of this stuff.
I don't know.
I guess the question I'm still trying to figure out, who's going to be the filmmaker that's going to shoot the Mars landing?
And Bob.
So that was good to share. Thank you very much. I appreciate that you shared that. It's really fascinating. I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
I'll probably ask you more questions about it. Let me know for sure. Yeah. Keep me in the Facebook group on that one.
We will.
Sabrina, we're out of here.